Okay, I have 20 minutes and I will only really share some musings on exploring space-time beyond classicality, which also seems appropriate given the rather, you know, general audience we have. Now, my motivation comes primarily from quantum gravity, from trying to find a fundamental theory of quantum gravity. And that means including one that works on very, very short distance scales, namely at or maybe even beyond this very short Planck scale of 10 to the minus 35 meters. Now, the question is always, you know, what becomes of space-time and gravity there? So that's the crucial question. So geometry might be expected just from generally what we know about quantum theory, what we know about general relativity, putting these things together, certainly to be dynamical there, but it may be very strongly quantum fluctuating. And that may result maybe in many or perhaps all properties of classical space-time being lost there. There are, of course, many things one could imagine. And, you know, many things might happen. There may, geometry may be completely irrelevant for looking at the Planck scale. You know, we can just, you know, let our imagination roam. But unfortunately, that doesn't lead to very specific places. So let's be conservative and let's just take as a starting point that we just want to go a little bit beyond classical geometry, you know, as much as we have to discover interesting new things, but still keeping a structure that we like to have. It's maybe not smoothness, but it's metric properties, being able to measure distances and volumes. Now, so that then poses a question, what happens in quantum gravity? But it turns out that also other people have been studying what might happen if we go beyond pseudo-Riemannian or Riemannian geometric settings, but in both mathematics and in physics. And I'll briefly mention a couple of examples. And as an example of where what happens in mathematics has, you know, personally been an inspiration to construct something new in quantum gravity, I mentioned the example of quantum curvature right at the end, a notion of curvature that works beyond just the Riemannian context. Okay, classical geometry, very familiar for us, to all of us who studied quantum gravity, general relativity, or just classical differential geometry. Yeah, we are describing curved manifolds that have extra structure, but by putting little coordinate systems on these manifolds, we can compute with them, you know, as if we were on Rn. So that's the beauty of it. We are capturing metric and curvature properties by a Lorentzian metric tensor. So we're setting up a tensor calculus. And that Lorentzian metric is typically taken smooth, so we can easily take derivatives and compute, for example, the Riemann curvature tensor. From a physics point of view, it's quite amazing that this model of space-time should work and be immensely powerful, apparently for a huge range of scales we're trying to describe in gravity and in the classical theory of general relativity. So, you know, anywhere from subatomic scales up to the scale of the visible universe. But this has to be taken with a grain of salt. So we do actually not work with or measure G mu nu directly in physics. In part, this has to do with the nature of gravity and the presence of the equivalence principle. So we are actually measuring kind of tidal fields, and we need, in order to measure them, we need kind of, you know, large boxes, uniform fields have the same effect on both observers and what they want to measure. So we have to go beyond that to discover the effects of gravity. And of course, we explore our real large-scale universe in a very, very non-local way, right, via light signals, so rods and clocks. And from that, extract information about its geometry. And we compare it to, for the case of cosmology, to highly idealized models where we're assuming isotropy and homogeneity. And so it's a very, very indirect way in which kind of G mu nu gets involved. And then there's, of course, if I may remind you, something that's called the averaging problem in even in classical cosmology, where one tries to understand the effect of inhomogeneities that exists on various scales and is not taken into account when we use Friedman, Robert, and Walker models, but nevertheless should be taken into account. But then we are hit by the property that unfortunately solving the Einstein equation doesn't commute with kind of smearing out and coarse graining such inhomogeneities. So Jimmy New is, you know, we love Jimmy New, we love our coordinates, that's what the textbook tells us, but that there is a gap with actually how we use it to describe the physics. And so I would say to claim that the universe is smooth just because we are using this model and it seems to work so well could be taken as a bit of a misnomer, even classically. So, however, of course, one can say this description works very well, and there's certainly something like an effective GMU new, think about cosmology, seems to work pretty well. Now, what's the essence of distinguishing the picture of space-time we have classically and we have in the quantum theory? So also maybe for those of you who've never thought about it, it's really two extremes. So according to general relativity, think of a piece of macroscopic curved space-time as we like to describe it by the Einstein equations. So like here's the ripples that constitute a gravitational wave, schematically in my right picture. Now, if we zoom in on them, the gravitational waves are, of course, they have a huge scale right there. The shortest one have a length scale of kilometers, but they're typically much, much larger. So if you go to a much smaller scale, if you examine in space and time, such an excitation, such a ripple, the closer we look, the flatter that piece of space-time will appear. So there's only a matter of scale, until really space-time just looks like a little piece of flat Minkowski space. Now, what we imagine happens in the quantum theory is kind of exactly the opposite. Here, imagine we're zooming in on a piece of empty space-time that may come from a solution of Einstein's equation. And we zoom in, and then, we start seeing, if you're only going to sufficiently short scales, quantum fluctuations of space-time itself starting to play a role. We may see some kind of quantum ripples, and then the images, when we get all the way to the Planck scale, as depicted here in this artistic impression, space-time will disintegrate, become bubbly and foamy, be a quantum space-time foam. It may be describable by some kind of effective metric that cannot be excluded. But again, the GMU new also here certainly shouldn't be taken too literally. How do we define tensors here? How do we define local coordinate systems in the usual way? That's of course difficult to imagine. So that brings us to trying to understand what happens to geometry beyond the way Riemann envisaged it. So that's more than 150 years ago. He wrote down this kind of infinitesimal line element for positive definite metrics, but it doesn't really matter. We use it also for Lorentzian structure. So how can we generalize this? And if we generalize it, what aspects, what properties of classical space-time geometry can we expect to hold? This question now turns out to have been studied in different context. So in the context of classical general relativity, there has actually been a bit of a boom in recent times studying space-times of what's called low regularity. What does it mean? Well, instead of assuming that the metric is just C infinity, or you say at least twice differentiable, so that's I can just take two derivatives to get the Riemann tensor. One wants to look at more general situations that are also physically motivated. For instance, the surface of a star is a place that is has finite differentiability structure. Or imagine you put a brain in space, or you put a cosmic spring in space-time. If you want to model those, then you need to go beyond the C infinity. And people have been studying here what's called C11. So these are kind of first differentiable, where the the first derivative is so-called Lipschitz continuous functions. So the curvature is still finite in these contexts, and an amazing number of classical properties still persist. So we have unique UG6 and much of smooth causality theory still holds. And that, there's a lot of work by the Vienna group. So I've just mentioned here a few names. So that's a big and quite interesting thing in classical general relativity. And it raises kind of an interesting question. There's like, what is the essence of space-time geometry that you can ask even classically? Yeah, what kind of things can I work with? And if I find that, you know, when I go to low regularities, that certain things do not work anymore, what does that mean about, you know, for true space-time? Now, on the math side, there's also a lot of interest in going beyond Riemannian geometry. So there are things like discrete combinatorial geometry. You know, I mentioned here a few things, kind of discrete building blocks, which you kind of assemble to form larger objects with metric properties, or which you use, say, to study coverings or tessellations. These are more classical usages. But of course, also by the advent of a computer and a lot of computing power, you know, people put together geometries from discrete building blocks and just study their properties really as geometries. And well, you can ask, yeah, are these good things to approximate, say, smooth or smooth loss structures in a way that makes it easy for me to compute? And then, of course, I have to study things like how do they converge to classical smooth objects? But if I take them more seriously, you know, in their own right, it's again to ask, okay, how do I characterize these objects? What are their essential properties? And is there a difference? Am I missing anything compared with the smooth case? Okay, now from the perspective of quantum gravity, we've been following such a kind of discrete, non-smooth, but still continuous perspective. And I won't be saying very much about this at all in my 20 minutes, but I've been involved in an approach to quantum gravity where one really is giving up on smooth spacetimes and tensor calculus. And that's not just, you know, a crazy idea of, you know, of people who are maybe close to retirement, but it has been key to recent progress in quantum gravity, I would claim. So my approach is that of CDT, or causal dynamical triangulations. But, you know, there are other approaches. I just mentioned the causal set approach that, you know, have many of these ideas in common, but they are going to even larger extremes. So what I'm working with is continuous geometries that are assembled from simplicial building blocks. So simplicial building blocks are just generalizations of triangles. So in three dimensions, they're tetrahedra that by definition are flat inside, flat Minkowskian. In 4D, they're four-dimensional building blocks. One glues these together to get space-times, kind of or approximate representations of curved space, and one puts them into a big quantum superposition when one takes kind of a gravitational path integral. So let me just flash, you know, one line, which is the famous sum over histories made very popular by Stephen Hawking and followers back in the 70s and 80s. Now, what you're doing there is you're really taking a quantum superposition over a space of geometry. So these are Lorentzian metrics where you have modded out by the diffeomorphism symmetry. So they're kind of what's called geometries. And you take this form of Barth integral and each, you know, with some measure and each of these histories, these geometries, you weigh with a complex weight that contains the Einstein-Hilbert action of that geometry. And that's then a Barth integral. And what is needed in order to make sense of that is really, this is of course a quantum field theory at the very least, and that needs regularization, it needs renormalization. And the very difficult thing is to arrange these things in a non-perturbative sense that doesn't mess with the diffeomorphism symmetry of the theory. And one way of doing it is really using an old idea that is due to Reggie, which is that of describing geometries totally without coordinates, but using these simplicial building blocks. So up here in the corner is a four-dimensional simplicial building block. Yeah, it has, in this case, it has some space like blue and some time like red edges. By definition, on the inside, it's flat. I have to specify the length of all these edges, and that fixes the geometry on the inside uniquely. Then I start gluing them together, and I can do that in such a way that curvature appears in the sense of kind of local deficit angles. So in this way, one can beautifully describe curved geometries. So then the idea is, in the path integral, you know, you just take, say, you know, 1,000 of these building blocks, you glue them together in, you know, to generate a manifold with curvature properties, and then you put them all in the path integral according to this prescription. And then you study, so it has a regulator, right? I said you take 1,000 building blocks, and the edge lengths are, you know, are your ultraviolet cutoff. And what you then do, you study this system, or rather its path integral, as the number of these building blocks goes to infinity, and or the edge lengths all shrink to zero. Yeah. And then you study this object, and you see, you try and understand whether it gives rise to an interesting quantum gravity theory. So one beauty of using these triangular building blocks, coordinate redundancy, the pain in the neck, yesterday's pain in the neck is kind of disappears completely in favor of a labeling, relabeling symmetry that this has, which can very easily be taken care of. Now, another thing to note is that where one finds interesting behavior in four dimensions of the system of this path integral is in a region that's very far away from classicality. And what that really entails is that kind of what one would think of as kind of the vacuum that is really being generated when one kind of computer simulates the underlying ensembles is nothing on short scales that looks like a classical geometry. Of course, it might look upon appropriate coarse graining classically, but certainly not on small scales. So one may then also ask, okay, you know, you're doing these non-perturbative things, everything quantum fluctuates, but how on earth am I going to recover g mean u of x? And where are the diffeomorphisms anyway? And shouldn't I get them back? Well, the answer is, again, that's maybe not quite the right way of thinking about it. And a beautiful example of that is a two-dimensional toy model of quantum gravity, which is Liouville gravity. Liouville gravity is just, you know, the gravitational path integral, like I've written it here, particularized to two dimensions. And one can, with some assumptions, you know, essentially solve it analytically in the continuum with pen and paper. And on the other side, one can also kind of triangulate it and follow the recipe I've just told you. And one can then compare the two things. Someone would say, okay, therefore, Liouville quantum gravity, you're writing it down in the continuum as a function of g mu nu. Yeah, where is your g mu nu? Well, the point is the g mu nu is nowhere to be seen in the quantum theory. So what you're comparing from the kind of triangulated path, regularized and renormalized path integral to the continuum quantum gravity model, you're comparing things, observables, things like endpoint functions, two-point functions. And of course, they are composite objects and they depend somewhere. There is a g mu nu that has gone into the construction there, but that's what one does. And marvelously, these two things, at least for all cases of observables one has looked at, coincide. So it's a—
1 minute, kind of Renata, sorry to interrupt. Just one, yes. 1 minute. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, you told me, you said I would have 2 minutes. Yes, okay. So let me take 1.5 minutes. Very briefly, curvature, how does it appear in such a context? Well, I know what it is for smooth cases, but how on earth am I going to, is it possible at all to associate a curvature with a quantum geometry, which is in our case very far from smooth, is still continuous. Yeah, it turns out it is possible. Yeah, and well, here's a bunch of papers where we've actually explored that. The important thing, or the important message, however, should be it's an inspiration that we took from discrete math, from a paper that was written by a mathematician, Jan Olivier, 11 years ago, he introduced a notion of what he called cause which he capture. And in a nutshell, the prescription is take your manifold, look at two geodesic spheres, we need positive definite curvature, compare the distance of the center of the spheres with the distance of the first to the second sphere as, you know, point sets. It doesn't really matter how you define it. Then the beauty is when you're sitting, you're doing that on a metric space that has positive Ricci curvature, the distance of the spheres will be smaller than the distance of their centers. And conversely, when you're sitting on a space with negative Ricci curvature. So we've implemented this in a quantum gravity context where we're setting the scale of the spheres to the same scale as the distance between the centers. And the beauty being, you need no smooth structure at all in order to compute this Ricci curvature. So this is my last slide here. So what do you do? You take the quotient of these two length scales, the distance of the spheres you divide by the distance of the centers. And that gives you a constant, so ignore this, and essentially a constant minus something that is, we call the quantum Ricci curvature. Yeah? So that depends on these spheres and the size delta. Now, if you do that on a smooth Riemannian manifold, it kind of reproduces the Ricci curvature. So this KQ is proportional to delta squared, as you would expect, yeah? Ricci curvature plus a little piece of the Ricci scalar, plus higher orders. Now, if you take that as a definition of Ricci's curvature beyond Riemannian case, well, it works and it gives you a beautiful notion of renormalized curvature in quantum gravity, which we've tried for toy models where your geometries really look like this in 2D. This is a Liouville gravity configuration, or like these candlesticks in two-dimensional CDT triangulations. But we've also used it to understand what the curvature is for dynamically generated four-dimensional geometry. And this yields an extremely exciting result, which I can now not explain in detail, namely more evidence that one has constant curvature, de Sitter behavior of the dynamically generated universe. So that brings me to some conclusions. There's evidently life beyond classical Riemannian geometry. Now, my particular motivation from looking at generalized geometry came from trying to set up a theory of quantum gravity directly at the Planck scale. But I'm not the only one who asks, you know, how can one do that and what aspects of classical space-time survive? So in various contexts, it's not that nothing survives, but perhaps even a little more than anticipated that survives, you know, including here a notion of curvature, as I've briefly mentioned to you. So that was something, you know, where I had been thinking about it for a while, and until I came across this beautiful math paper where, you know, that planted the idea in me of doing this in quantum gravity. Now, as a last remark, you know, we've also yesterday talked about how does classical spacetime emerge? Yeah? And from studying examples, really studying that in a concrete context, we have understood that it shouldn't be done by, you know, trying to find G mean of X somewhere, but it should be done, and it can only be done by comparing non-local observables. So, and kind of a Ricci curvature is an example of such an observable. So this will, of course, indirectly depend on metric structures and maybe on some effective metrics that you can, you know, localize in there somewhere. But this is at most in an effective sense, in a sense of being part of a composite observable. So my conclusion is that we've, you know, found a beautiful role of discovery of the true nature of physical space-time, which we'll hopefully continue to travel on with more interesting discoveries. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Renata. We have time for maybe one, or maybe if I might squeeze in two very quick questions. So Susanna, please.
Hi, thank you very much for this talk. This is sparking a lot of ideas for me, not in a physical domain, but in the kind of very discrete data science domain that I work in. Just so I understand what you're trying to say with the Ricci curvature, is this really an approximation for curvature that doesn't use second derivatives?
Yes. Yeah. So it's okay. Really, it's, so smoothness is not required. You can even apply it on a thing like a graph.
Right. Yes. Which is a type of structures that I have. I have simplicial complexes and I have graphs and I have discrete spaces.
Yes.
Okay.
As long as you have a notion of measuring distances and of measuring volumes.
Yes.
Then it applies. Go ahead and compute it.
You may have just made my day. So let me, maybe if there's time, or maybe I can follow up with you in the Remo.
Sure. Oh, we can chat in the Remo.
Yes. So the world that I live in right now is I have a approximate manifold. I have basically a lattice, say, of unevenly objects. And I can think about each object as some sort of a collapsing of a, position amplitude or whatever, right? Like it is a draw from a sample with a given distribution. So in some way, I'm collapsing a waveform to be able to think about this. So in your initial slide where you said, talking about geometries beyond Riemannian geometries, one of the things that I really struggle with in the space is trying to marry trying to combine the probability density here with the actual geometry that I'm trying to get at. And I was wondering if you had any suggestions or if you know of any work that's kind of moved in this type of direction.
Well, I don't know whether what we do applies.
Sure, because, certainly.
I'm evaluating a path integral. So when I now say, I'm looking at geometry or I'd look at curvature, of course, I'm looking at the expectation values of operators I'm constructing on my configuration space. So it's really an ensemble of objects. It's a statistical sum, it's kind of a Wick quotated path integral where I evaluate those. I take ensemble averages. So I don't know, there may be some parallels to what you want to do.
Okay, I won't take up the group time. I might follow up with you later.